Hello, this is Sandra Ferguson with the Friday, April 21st, 2017 edition of the News Gazette. And we will begin on the front page with an article from the Illinois Telecom Act called Groups Fight for Landline Mandate. AT&T would like it dropped in order to move customers to newer technologies by Zen Zichterman, Champaign. AARP Illinois and the Citizens Utility Board came out in opposition to state legislation that would eliminate the requirement that AT&T provide traditional landline service. They warned that without the requirement, AT&T would drop landline service. They will say, nobody's going to lose service. Well, if that's the case, why do you need to change the language? AARP's Julie Volling said. A top AT&T official strongly denied that charge, saying that nobody is going to lose their home phone service. Any claim by our opponents implying that home phone service is going away is absolutely false, AT&T Illinois President Paul LaSciaza said in a statement. At AT&T, we value our customers, and we want to keep them. In this transition, we want to improve the technology customers use for voice calling service from old service to modern landlines and wireless. About 90% of households in AT&T territory already moved to modern wired and wireless services. But AARP and the CUB are worried about the remaining 10% and argue the new services aren't as reliable as traditional landlines, pointing to a 9/11 outage last month for AT&T wireless customers that lasted over an hour. They are mandating that users use a certain form of modern technology that has not yet gotten to that level of reliability of the copper-based network. All we're asking is, let's get to that level of reliability, Volling said. I can be within an hour of downtown Chicago and have poor reception. Consumers need high reliability for 9/11 or 911 and some medical monitoring devices, Volling said. The Illinois Telecommunications Act expires on June 30th, so something will need to be passed by then. AT&T unsuccessfully sought to remove the landline requirement in 2015, when the act was previously set to expire. Volling encouraged lawmakers to wait to remove the landline requirements until the new technology is reliable enough and more people are using it. What we're asking is just to slow down, she said. There's nothing stopping the legislature from simply changing the expiration date on the Telecom Act and putting it 2 years down the road. AT&T, on the other hand, says it's unnecessarily spending money maintaining outdated technology it could be investing in modern infrastructure. AT&T, which last year had a net income of $13 billion, annually spends about $1 billion in Illinois on infrastructure, with about 20 to 30% of that going toward the traditional copper-based network, company spokesman Eric Robinson said. What we are working to do is to invest money appropriately, Robinson said, and to continue to spend precious resources, capital investment, on old technologies, it doesn't make sense. If approved, the legislation would only remove the requirement for AT&T once the Federal Communications Commission allowed it. If that happened, AT&T says 99.2% of households in its territory already have access to modern wired telephone service. If someone were left without landline access, the legislation would allow them to petition the Illinois Commerce Commission to force AT&T to provide traditional landline service. AT&T also tried to allay any concerns about medical devices, saying that it's required to provide reliable replacement services for such devices. the FCC recently made clear that AT&T cannot stop offering legacy voice services that provide these applications unless robust replacement services are available to customers, Robinson said. And next, and the crowd goes wild. This is about Ebertfest, which is taking place in Champaign right now. Seen and heard. Here's what caught the eye of Melissa Murley in her 19th year covering Ebertfest. First, I had been unfamiliar with actor Hugh Dancy's work until I saw Hysteria at Ebertfest. After only 5 minutes of watching him on screen, I became a huge fan. No wonder director Tanya Wexler can make a movie like Hysteria. Her late father, Gerald, allowed her as a young teen to vociferously express her opinions. He did not let people silence her. And finally, the University of Illinois Library will soon put Roger Ebert's archives online, a soft opening of some of those documents, including letters to mentor friend Daniel Curley, is on view in the East Lobby of the Virginia during Ebertfest. And our next piece is from the University of Illinois called Sit-In Calls for Advisors Retention. Department Head Says Funds Lacking by Julie Worth, Urbana. Students protesting the elimination of the sole academic advisor in the Department of African American Studies have staged a sit-in that entered its second day Thursday. Students gathered at the department's offices in a house at 1201 West Nevada Street on Wednesday afternoon, following a related rally on the quad. They want the university to reinstate the position held by Lou Turner, who had been the advisor there since 2006. The Black United Front, which helped organize the protest, is also pushing the UI to increase Black enrollment through a Project 1000 campaign to admit 1,000 Black freshmen a year by fall 2020. The campus had 548 Black freshmen last fall, fewer than the 565 in 1968, the first year of the Project 500 initiative. About 25 students camped out peacefully in the department's living room overnight, and organizers said they plan to continue the sit-in until the position is reinstated. Removing an academic advisor from an ethnic studies department affects students in significant ways, said UI senior Inez Nava of the Movimiento Estudiantil Chicano de Aslan, Chicano Student Movement of Aslan, which is supporting the sit-in. This is a person that encouraged students to remain in school, that became a mentor for these students. So removing him seems like an attack on the students, she said. Turner said he was informed last August that his position would be eliminated in September 2017, a standard one-year termination notice for academic professionals. The department head, Professor Ron Bailey, said it was a budgetary decision, part of a reorganization of his small department prompted by steep cuts in the UI's state funding over the past 2 years. Turner, who has criticized Bailey's leadership, believes there's more to it. That's not the reason. The reason is that the head has been wanting to get rid of me for some time, he said Thursday. Turner said he works with about 72 students, graduate and undergraduate, who are majoring or minoring in African American studies, helping them select courses, writing recommendation letters, and offering career counseling. Turner and others argued the university could find money for his position. He said he earns about $46,000 a year. Bailey said he couldn't respond to specific questions on a personnel matter, but supports increasing Black enrollment. In a prepared statement, Bailey said the department is reducing the number of staff positions from 4 to 2. 2 will be eliminated in September, and a previously vacant position, an administrative assistant, was filled in March. Faculty members will absorb advising duties, and the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences will provide human resources and financial support, he said. Two factors contributed to the need for these changes. First, African American studies has seen a decrease in majors, minors, and course teaching load in the last decade, and our staff reduction is in response to these declines. Second, the ongoing lack of a state budget means the department has been asked to operate on decreased funding in the past 2 years, and as we move forward, the department's only way to absorb funding reductions is to reduce the cost of its staff, Bailey wrote. He said he hopes to improve the department's offerings to serve more students across campus. NAVA and UI senior Evan Sosin said they want Bailey to join them in demanding more support for the department from campus. The department has had internal strife for some time, according to students, and a letter written by four senior faculty members to their colleagues. The faculty blamed Turner and a former department head for involving students in departmental disagreements and instigating the student protests. In a written response, the students strongly objected to that characterization. Turner, who is married to another faculty member in the department, Ruby Mendenhall, said he had no role in the protests and said the students' support has been very moving. UI junior Karen Olawu, a member of the Black United Front, said students heard rumors about the position being eliminated last fall, but didn't get the official word until recently. Why a sit-in now? It's the 150th anniversary of the UI. We have a black chancellor, Donald Trump is president, and black and brown students are tired of seeing our academic futures devalued, Olawu said. The Black United Front wants the UI to adopt an aggressive recruitment campaign for black students, including $2 million in scholarships next fall and $8 million by fall 2020. And we'll turn now to the opinions page and begin with an editorial called "Can Illinois Handle Truth?" Here's another warning that seems certain to be ignored. Everyone who's paying attention knows that Illinois' finances are in terrible shape. But really, how bad are they? Well, according to Truth in Accounting, it's even worse than the worst pessimists among the citizenry think it is. Government officials continue to obscure large amounts of retirement debt on their balance sheets, despite new rules to increase financial transparency, the Chicago-based financial think tank states. This skewed financial data gives state residents a false impression of their state's overall financial health. The question raised by this latest revelation is whether it even makes a dent in our collective understanding of the gravity of this state's finances. Further, assuming our elected officials in Springfield understand, and that's a dangerous assumption, how long will they allow politics to continue to trump policy in terms of working together on a solution? Just a couple days ago, Governor Bruce Rauner expressed optimism that he and Republican and Democrat members of the Illinois Senate can reach common ground on the budget and policy reforms issues that have divided them. People should wait to see whether Rauner is correct before they put too much stock in his optimistic prediction. But even if Rauner and the Senate can reach an accord, there's real doubt whether Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan will seriously consider allowing the House to embrace the agreement. There's plenty of evidence that Madigan is prepared to allow the state to go without a budget until the November 2018 election. Even if that's not accurate, it's still pretty clear that Madigan continues to stick by his plan to deny Rauner any of the policy changes he's seeking. After all, Illinois already has gone nearly 2 years without a budget. What's two more if the politics of capturing the governor's office in 2018 is the issue rather than the best interests of the people of Illinois? So, according to Truth in Accounting, here's where the state is at. It contends that Illinois now needs $210.4 billion to pay off its bills, equating to $50,400 for every Illinois taxpayer. The Illinois Comptroller's Office reported Thursday that its backlog of unpaid bills has reached $13.4 billion. Just a couple weeks ago, it stood at around $12.5 billion. The increase serves as another reminder that problems ignored don't go away but get worse. As for Illinois' unfunded public pension liability, the latest number was $131 billion. But that number grows worse by the year. Truth in Accounting said the pension debt jumped by $21 billion, or 18% more, in 1 year. As for the state spending absent a budget, more money continues to be spent than is coming in, billions more dollars. Trust and Accounting puts the total debt at $210.4 billion, higher than previous reports have indicated, because the state's retirement plan actuarial report and its audited 2016 comprehensive annual financial report do not include health care costs for retirees in the teacher retirement insurance program or its college insurance program. In spite of this looming disaster, it seems that nothing less than complete capitulation to Speaker Madigan's budget demands will lead to a political settlement. Perhaps that's why Truth in Accounting's CEO, Sheila Weinberg, said, "We're not calling it a fiscal crisis anymore. It's a crisis in democracy, because the legislators are spending money we don't have, and we're not able to make taxing and spending decisions because we're not given enough information," she said. The people of Illinois, however, have been given enough information to know that it's way past time for our elected officials to take action. If only they would come to a similar conclusion. And now we'll turn to the From Our Readers section and begin with a piece called Leave Parkland Faculty, Take Seat. And this is written by Charles V. Evans of Champaign. It is regretful from several perspectives that the Rochelle Hardin debate is unfolding at this time. First, Parkland College as all of Illinois higher education, is under severe stress. Parkland needs all board members focused on assuring its future, not this distraction. Second, Hardin's self-proclamations on her legal standing as a faculty member to serve on the board do nothing but cloud the true issues and undermine one's faith in the integrity of Parkland's fine faculty. If she has an informed legal position, she should provide it. Finally, and perhaps most important, Parkland has an admirable history of men, mostly, and women, who have served on its board with distinction to the betterment of the college, and distinct but greater minority representation on the board is sorely needed. In light of the many qualified individuals available within the Parkland 505 district, Hardin's campaign and subsequent election as a faculty member is an opportunity lost. That being said, the will of the people is as clear as the relevant statute. Rochelle Hardin should resign her faculty position and take her seat on the District 505 board. And that again was written by Charles V. Evans of Champaign. The next piece is written by Delciana Winders from the Animal Law and Policy Fellow at the Harvard Law School in Cambridge, Massachusetts. It's called Circus Has History of Abusing Animals. Before readers buy tickets to the Kelly Miller Circus in Rantoul on May 4th, they should consider the notorious company's long, well-documented history of abusing and neglecting animals and endangering the public. as government inspector caught Kelly Miller's zebra and camel exhibitor shocking animals with an electric prod. The circus's tiger exhibitor has repeatedly committed animal welfare violations, including failing to provide veterinary care to injured animals, failing to meet minimum space requirements, and failing to adequately contain tigers. Three tigers previously escaped from the circus, and Kelly Miller's longtime elephant exhibitor paid numerous penalties for Animal Welfare Act violations, including attacking elephants with a bullhook, a weapon that resembles a fireplace poker, and an electric prod, while they cried out and repeatedly endangering the public. Abuse is the rule, not the exception, when it comes to wild animals used in circuses, and I sincerely hope that this is the last year the Rantoul Area Chamber of Commerce chooses to partner with known animal abusers. And that again was written by Delciana Winders, Animal Law and Policy Fellow from Harvard's Law School, Cambridge, Massachusetts. And the last From Our Readers piece is written by Terry Ferguson from Clinton, called Davis Effective in Discussing Issues. Congressman Rodney Davis, Republican from Taylorville, has been attacked for not holding town hall events. Davis has made himself available to his constituents in small groups where issues can be discussed in detail. As a farmer, I have been proud of the way Rodney looks to our grassroots organizations for positions on issues impacting agriculture. He and his staff have always been available to look into individual concerns, and his constituent service is second to none as a congressional office. Congressman Davis has been a leader in working in a bipartisan approach in getting the last food and agriculture bill passed. He worked in the same way to get the last transportation bill authorized. Both of these bills brought needed dollars to the state of Illinois. I was in a meeting with Davis last week, and the issues of trade, regulation, energy, and health insurance were the center of discussion. Rodney has always worked in smaller groups to discuss the needs of constituents, working in a respectful manner to discuss issues. It seems that many are mad that the last election did not go their way and want to take out their frustrations in the form of confrontational town hall meetings. It should be noted that, win or lose, when the election is over, issues need to be discussed in a civil manner. Congressman Davis is a representative who cares about getting information to make a good decision for Illinois. Give his office a call. And that again was written by Terry Ferguson of Clinton. And we'll turn now to the history section in some area history. In 1917, Illinois is the leading corn producer state in the United States, and Champaign County is tops in Illinois. The number two county is Iroquois, followed by LaSalle, Livingston, and McLean, according to the Champaign Daily News. And in 1967, bids for the Douglas County Telescope are now being received by University of Illinois architects. Bids for general work on the Optical Telescope building north of Oakland will be opened May 23rd. In 2002, the new superintendent of schools in Champaign, Arthur Culver, said last week in an interview with the News Gazette that he was convinced to come to Champaign after meeting with the school board, community members, and school district staff, who he found were committed to closing the achievement gap and in excellence in education for all kids. And in today's international history, today's highlight, on April 21, 1967, Army officers in Greece staged a coup, seizing power and creating a military dictatorship that ruled the country for the next 7 years. And on this date in 1910, author Samuel Langhorne Clemens, better known as Mark Twain, died in Redding, Connecticut at age 74. In 1930, Fire broke out inside the overcrowded Ohio Penitentiary in Columbus, killing 332 inmates. And in Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy staff writer Bob Asmussen. For 7 years, Derek Fabert's been telling us when we need a coat or an umbrella, but the WCIA chief meteorologist is hanging up his green screen. Saturday's Christie Clinic Illinois Marathon's coverage will be Fabert's last day on the job. "For me, it was a personal decision," Fabert said. "It was time for me to do something new. It was a difficult decision, but it was also the right decision for me. WCIA has been great to me. My career goal was to be a chief meteorologist, and there I was, doing so at 28. The years I had at WCIA were fantastic." You will see Fabert's work by looking toward the sky. He will be real estate manager for Champaign's Adams Outdoor Advertising. "It's a completely new challenge," Fabert said. "They pursued me, and then after a while I kind of pursued them." Fabert, 32, said he is likely out of TV forever. "As far as the weather world goes, we'll see what happens. You never know." Fabert grew up in Indiana and attended Purdue. He has family from the Arthur area. Jack Gerfen and Adam Claibon remain on the WCIA weather team. And in the sports page from Illinois Basketball, "Kansas Champion Receives UI Offer" by Scott Ritchie, Champaign. Illinois' pursuit of filling its 4 open scholarships for the 2017-18 season now officially includes Francesco Bidocchi. The 6'7" senior forward received an offer from the Illini on Thursday afternoon, according to a tweet from Bishop Meege from Kansas High School assistant coach Kevin Wiesner. Bidocchi helped lead Bishop Meege to a Kansas Class 4A state title last month and averaged 13.9 points per game for the 2-time defending champion Stags this past season. He scored 21 points in Bishop Meege's state title victory against McPherson, Illinois coach Brad Underwood's alma mater. Bidocchi, a native of Milan, Italy, also received an offer from Virginia on Thursday. He took official visits to both Illinois and Virginia this week and reportedly will take an official visit at Boise State early next week. And next, an apparent suicide, fire victim ID'd by Tim Mitchell, Urbana. Champaign County Coroner Dwayne Northrup has identified the University of Illinois student who died Wednesday morning in an apparent suicide on the roof of Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Dwayne Northrup said Wesley Banks, 21, of Gurnee, died after he reportedly poured gasoline over his body and ignited it. Northrup said Mr. Banks was pronounced dead by coroner's office employees at 4 a.m. Wednesday at the scene of the incident. According to preliminary autopsy results, Mr. Banks had inhalation burns to the airway and lungs as a result of the fire. Northrup said he is still waiting for toxicology results. The incident is being investigated by Northrup's office and UI police. No official determination will be made until the investigation is completed, Northrup said. And we'll take a short break now and then return with the second half hour of the Friday, April 21st, 2017 edition of the News Gazette. I'm Sandra Ferguson. Please stay tuned.